Hi, everyone. This is Alicia Halliday, and this is the ASF Weekly Science Podcast. Happy President's Day. Since this is President's Day, I am going to make this podcast a quickie so you can all go about your day buying bras and panties at half price. I am going to focus on a topic that I think that is very presidential and very timely, which is autism and violence. Given that this last week marks the one-year anniversary of Parkland shootings, and that there was another act of gun violence in Illinois just this week, not to mention the dozens of mass shootings in between last February and today, I think this is a very presidential topic. Now, not autism and gun violence specifically, and not just people with autism and their violent behavior, but how people with autism are affected by violence. Well, first of all, people with developmental disabilities are more likely to be the victims than the perpetrators of violence. This finding isn't necessarily new, but it has been reinforced in recent scientific analyses that emerged recently. While people with developmental disorders are about 10% of the population, remember, this is all developmental disorders, not just autism, they represent about 30% of the group that has been maltreated in childhood. This data comes from Australia, which uses registries to determine disability and the database equivalent of the Department of Child and Youth Services, known as DIFAS, in the States. These data represent not just an alleged allegation of mistreatment, but a confirmed case. This recent study in Australia found something interesting, that children with autism and intellectual disability, mental and behavioral problems, and conduct disorder continue to have an increased risk of an allegation and a substantiated allegation after adjusting for child, family, and neighborhood risk factors. On the other hand, in this study, the group found that those with autism without an intellectual disability, Down syndrome, and cerebral palsy had no increased risk. So it looks like multiple conditions, higher risk of maltreatment. The increased risk of being the victim with comorbid conditions is something of particular concern. And what are the consequences of this victimization? Well, it's as bad as you can imagine it. In a study in the U.S., researchers and advocacy organizations partnered in an online audio-assisted anonymous survey of 350 men and women with autism. So this was self-report. Remember, the Australian study was using existing databases. In the other study, they broke down the abuse types into things like physical, sexual, and related to a disability. Related to a disability would be things like withholding a wheelchair or refusing to honor a structured schedule. All three types of abuses were associated with adult depression, PTSD, as well as secondary health conditions like fatigue, chronic pain, circulatory problems, and heart problems. This effect was seen when demographic and family history variables were taken into account and seen for both men and women. Now, these were in people that were able to describe their abuse and symptoms. What about people with autism that are in immediate crisis or maybe not be able to fully communicate the after effects? So data from the autism inpatient collection demonstrated that, as expected, about 25% of those in the autism inpatient settings had a caregiver report that the person had been abused in some sort of setting. Sometimes it was sexual, sometimes it was emotional abuse. One quarter of those who had experienced abuse could not speak. The researchers wanted to know the symptoms of abuse in that group. They showed that more distressing thoughts and loss of interest in activities and higher levels of irritability and lethargy than other peers with autism. They then divided these people into groups that had a diagnosis of PTSD and those without a PTSD diagnosis. When they compared those participants who received a clinical PTSD diagnosis compared to those with caregiver-reported abuse histories without a clinical PTSD diagnosis, participants with PTSD had more intrusive thoughts and distressing memories. Just a clarification on this study, though, there was no control group to compare people who did not have autism but did have PTSD. Now, finally, a recent study looked at types of victimization in those with ASD and compared them to those without ASD. This was, again, a self-report study, so it could get into different types of abuse or victimization. A staggering 90% of everyone in that study reported some sort of childhood victimization, and this included those with and without autism. Now, this includes beating, bullying, spanking, neglect, teasing, assault, assault with a gun, and sexual abuse. These numbers were horrifying to me. That was everyone. 90% of everyone has been exposed to some sort of violence. Anyway, though, people with autism report a wider range of victimization. Specifically, they were more likely to be the victim of a property crime, to be bullied or teased, to be mistreated as a child or assaulted by a group or gang. They were also more likely to be sexually assaulted by a peer. This covers victimization, but what about violence? To get to this question, Sweden used their registry magic to link an autism diagnosis in the Stockholm youth cohort with incarceration for different crimes. Out of about 6,000 youth with autism, there was no increase in criminal behavior. However, if you added in ADHD or conduct disorder into the autism diagnosis, there was a slightly increased risk for committing a violent crime. Among individuals with autism, male sex and comorbid psychiatric conditions were the strongest predictors of violent criminality, along with parental criminal and psychiatric history, and of course, socioeconomic characteristics. There was some evidence that a delayed diagnosis of autism was associated with a greater risk of violent crime, and better school performance and intellectual disability, in this case, appeared to be protective. If you're confused and feel like these findings are contradictory, you're kind of right to be doubtful. In this analysis, the researchers lumped all different types of violence together. A comment to this article, authored by a professor of psychiatry and law at Yale, Dr. Alexander Westfall, pointed out that planned and impulsive violent acts were lumped together. He points out that these are two very different types, and in fact, lumping them together does no service to the autism community. Impulsive violent acts are more common in people with autism, and while the media has focused on premeditated acts of violence in autism, they're usually case reports and don't reflect the body of data. Either way, even given this common lumping versus splitting problem, there was no link between autism and committing a violent crime. It wasn't my deliberate intention to link violence and victimization with presidential matters this week, but given that how society handles the mentally ill, how gun violence is attributed to mental illness but not necessarily gun availability, and how this is a policy issue at the forefront of this administration, I thought it was worth mentioning today. Thanks for listening and talk to you next week.